Welcome to National Liberty's weekly call. Today is Monday, February 20th, 2023. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. Or if anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on the donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. You can also support us by purchasing the books, Government by Consent and Court Access in the Common Law. Find them on the right-hand side of our website. Also, join our campaign for constitutional sheriffs. You can also find that on the right-hand side of our website or on our front page, just a little bit down. Okay, we're going to pick up where we left off last week in scripture reading. We're in the book of Galatians. And we're in chapter 4, read by Alexander Scorby. Galatians chapter 4.
Chapter 4. Now I said that the heir, as long as he is a child, differeth nothing from a servant, though he be lord of all, but is under tutors and governors until the time appointed of the father. Even so, we, when we were children, were in bondage under the elements of the world. But when the fullness of the time was come, God sent forth his Son, made of a woman, made under the law, to redeem them that were under the law, that we might receive the adoption of sons. And because ye are sons, God hath sent forth the Spirit of his Son into your hearts, crying, Abba, Father. Wherefore thou art no more a servant, but a son, and if a son, then an heir of God through Christ. Howbeit, then when ye knew not God, ye did service unto them which by nature are no gods. But now, after that ye have known God, or rather are known of God, how turn ye again to the weak and beggarly elements whereunto ye desire again to be in bondage? Ye observe days and months and times and years. I am afraid of you, lest I have bestowed upon you labor in vain. Brethren, I beseech you, be as I am, for I am as ye are. Ye have not injured me at all. Ye know how through infirmity of the flesh I preached the gospel unto you at the first, and my temptation which was in my flesh ye despised not nor rejected, but received me as an angel of God, even as Christ Jesus. Where is then the blessedness ye spake of? For I bear you record that if it had been possible, ye would have plucked out your own eyes and had given them to me. Am I therefore become your enemy, because I tell you the truth? They zealously affect you, but not well. Yea, they would exclude you, that ye might affect them. But it is good to be zealously affected always in a good thing, and not only when I am present with you. My little children, of whom I travail in birth again until Christ be formed in you, I desire to be present with you now and to change my voice, for I stand in doubt of you. Tell me, ye that desire to be under the law, do ye not hear the law? For it is written that Abraham had two sons, the one by a bondmaid, the other by a free woman. But he who was of the bondwoman was born after the flesh, but he of the free woman was by promise. Which things are an allegory? For these are the two covenants, the one from the Mount Sinai, which gendereth to bondage, which is Agar. For this Agar is Mount Sinai in Arabia, and answereth to Jerusalem, which now is, and is in bondage with her children. But Jerusalem, which is above, is free, which is the mother of us all. For it is written, Rejoice, thou barren that bearest not, break forth and cry, thou that travailest not, for the desolate hath many more children than she which hath an husband. Now we, brethren, as Isaac was, are the children of promise. But as then he that was born after the flesh persecuted him that was born after the Spirit, even so it is now. Nevertheless, what saith the scripture? Cast out the bondwoman and her son, for the son of the bondwoman shall not be heir with the son of the free woman. So then, brethren, we are not children of the bondwoman, but of the free.
Okay, Jan, do we have any questions tonight?
Well, we have some here. I'm not sure if you covered this one last week or not. This one is regarding a appeal for a criminal case for having pallets on your property. The court wants him to distribute a 1925B statement to three different offices, and he's unable to find an example anywhere of what a 1925B statement is, online or at the county library. Can you think of any other options he might have?
Well, it sounds like something that's a town ordinance or something. It's in a town. It's a town situation, right?
Okay.
Something on his property, so it's probably a town. I have no idea. He'd have to. All he's got to do is call the town up and ask for information where he can locate that particular ordinance or code or whatever they want to call it. So, anything else?
Yeah, this one I'm not too clear on what it really wants. It starts out, the court judge requested all documents that you would have to go on to a federal court to support the attorney that was brought into the case after the case went to Commonwealth Court. In the appeal for my deceased parents, I put in the appeal that if I didn't get justice, I'd go on to federal court. Now the lower court judge thinks that I owe him all the information because the solicitor for the county handled the case. Now they're trying to bring in another, and literally have at this point brought in another attorney into the case who handles federal cases. And this attorney has never heard anything of my case until the county brought her into the picture. What should I do?
Well, I'm not even sure what kind of a case it is, so I really don't know. But one of the problems, I mean, I can give some people some help, but they have to have some basic understanding, and it's always been a problem if they don't have some kind of an understanding of how the court system works and, you know, what exactly they can do. But I would need a lot more information in order to understand that. I would strongly suggest, as I'm suggesting to many people these days, is to take that course that we're setting up. We'll be starting it next Saturday, by the way. We are set to go. I finished the course, putting it together about an hour or two ago, and I just got to go through it, and I got plenty of time to go through it to make sure everything looks good. You know, anybody who takes that course, you know, you'll really come to a really good understanding of how the court system works. You'll understand how to defend yourself and how to write papers and what papers are necessary, what court to go to, how to defend yourself. You can learn a lot and to be able to defend yourself in any court. But anybody who takes that course, then if they have an issue or a problem, and I don't have to explain the basics to them, I can give them some information maybe on something that they may not understand, and they have a framework in their mind to be able to, you know, deal with that information. That's one of the big problems. People who don't have any experience in the court, well, you know, I can give some information, but a lot of it they may not even understand. They still have to understand how the process works. And so anyway, I would suggest to that person to take the course and, you know, as far as whatever's going on in the court, you know, try to put it off as much as possible. Look at these guys, they often are the other side when you go up against anybody in a case. They kind of drag their feet. They take a long time. They ask for extensions, so on and so forth. You could do the same thing. I think within the first Saturdays, it's probably going to be 12. I'm thinking this is going to be probably about 15 or 16 sessions to get through the entire course. And we'll be meeting just on every Saturday at 12 o'clock, and each session will go for about an hour and a half. Probably in a few cases it'll be a little longer, and in some cases it'll be a little shorter. But generally speaking, about an hour and a half. But I would think after the first four, if you really, you know, do your diligence and pay attention and do the homework that's necessary, and which is really mostly reading, then you'll probably be able to have enough information to be able to start dealing with these people. And again, you want to push as much time as you can. I would tell them that you're looking for counsel. You don't know you don't understand what's going on. It's going to take you a little time, and you need a month or so. And then when that time comes up, maybe try to get a couple of more weeks. But just push for extensions. You know, money could be a situation. You might use that as a leverage, saying, you know, you need money to get a counselor, and or you're trying to find somebody. So that's all I could suggest to that person. And then maybe they'll understand enough of more of the case, what's going on, that they'll be able to explain it better, and then I would understand and maybe be able to help some way. But again, you have to have some kind of an understanding of the court in order to deal with the court. You know, it's not just, you know, if you don't have knowledge of how things work, you're just going to be totally lost, and they'll walk all over you. You'll miss opportunities. You know, you won't be able to control the court. The court will control you, or the other side will control you, shall I say. And maybe the court will control you, too, because judges, you know, they do whatever they can to really stick in this civil law procedure. So, anyway, any other questions?
Yes. What is, or where can I find, a very specific protocol for establishment of and operation of procedures of a common law grand jury and common law court?
Read that one more time.
What is, or where can I find, a very specific protocol for establishment of and operation of procedures of a common law grand jury and common law court?
Well, look, at anybody who wants to learn that, we're training people to become administrators for that process, for that purpose, and that takes some time. There's quite a few courses we have going. Definitely the law course that we're running is a definite necessity for anyone who wants to be an administrator for these juries, these grand juries and trial juries, and really they'd be administrating them and pulling them together. Not just anyone should pull together juries in order to try to do anything if they haven't really come to a certain understanding. I mean, a lot of abuse will take place, and we may abuse things as bad as they're abusing things if we don't understand the process. We don't understand how to orientate a jury to bring them together. And also to be just, to come with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy in our thinking as we do these things. So, again, we're given training if they're interested. We have books. If you go up to our website and you come up education, okay, and you start the education by taking our courses, we also have information underneath starting the Committee of Safety, which we also have some handbooks out there, which will be helpful to some degree. We are writing a handbook. I have started it, but I still got quite a bit of work to put it together. I've done all the research already. It's just a matter of putting it together, though. A handbook for administrators for the grand jury on how to address a jury, how to call for a jury. You know, the whole process has to be done under the auspices of the court. You know, we've been operating as a grand jury from the standpoint of a unified United States common law grand jury. And that grand jury is operating sort of in tents outside of the courts because we've tried to get access into the courts. They've refused us access. But the people have every right to pull together a grand jury. But again, we got to be careful, otherwise we may become as abusive as they are. You know, people get lost in a lot of different things. They get lost into man on the land stuff. And you know, I understand all that. I went through that process myself. But we just have to be very careful. We'd be tainting juries maybe as bad as they're tainting juries if we don't understand how to deal with the jury and to orientate that jury. So come take our courses, get involved, and if you want to become an administrator within your county, in the state court within your county, that's what we're planning to prepare people to do. Definitely, the jury should never be called by and controlled by the government. Never was until the last, 100 years or so. They've been working on this. The federal government didn't really take hold of the grand jury until the 70s. Prior to 1970s, the early 70s, they didn't have the authority through any kind of legislative authority anyway to call forth a grand jury. But that legislative authority that they gave to themselves through the legislators, again, this is all a bar association maneuver and destruction of our judicial system. They didn't have the power to do that. We didn't give that power. You won't read anywhere in the Constitution where we gave the legislators any authority to do anything with the grand jury at all. As a matter of fact, the grand jury, other than in the, I believe it's the Seventh Amendment, the grand jury in itself, we don't even talk about any of the grand juries within, well, none, we don't even talk about the jury at all in the Constitution. It's just mentioned in the Bill of Rights, the trial jury and the grand jury, one time each. And that's the business of the people. And it's always been the business of the people. You know, in history, those who called forth the grand jury was the sheriff and the coroner. Unfortunately, both of those individuals in pretty much every county is uneducated to this process and system, and they don't do it. They don't understand that they're empowered to do it, and that's their job to call for the jury. Now, to orientate that jury and to bring that jury together for the calling of that jury, that's the people's job. And again, the government has seized control of it all. As a matter of fact, the Bar Association has seized control of it because the judge controls the jury in the jury room, in the courtroom. And the prosecutor also is involved to a major degree on that, but the prosecutor controls the grand jury. And that's a total violation. It's a conflict of interest. It's the fox in charge of the hen house. And that's why they're getting away with all this law-breaking and doing whatever they please, because you can't get to them. The jury can't get to them. The jury can't hear anything of their crimes, and they cover it up and they control the whole process. And of course, that's our problem. But we got to take it back, and we're working on that. All right, next question.
Can you provide a historic definition of due process of law per the Fifth Amendment?
Well, due process of law is the right to be heard, and in a court of law, a court of justice, ultimately that's really what due process is. And charges, there's rules, the rules of common law, there's common law rules that need to be abided by. Again, we get back to the rules that they have created, for instance, the federal rules of civil procedure in the federal level. And the state has done the same thing. They have created their own rules, which, again, they abolished the rules of common law in order to do that. Again, a power and authority they did not have. It wasn't even legislated away. Again, legislators played ball with them to give them the power to write their rules. And when they wrote their rules, they abrogated the common law, and they abrogated the law of the land altogether. They abrogated the rules of common law. And they put into place civil law, Babylonian law, Roman law. Most attorneys think that we are under Roman law. Matter of fact, I was just looking at something about that on the internet just today. But anyway, they believe we're under Roman law, which we are at this point, because Roman law is civil law, which has its roots in Babylon. It comes through Justinian law than Roman law. All the same thing, just different names, a different covering for the same thing, to control the people. Well, I kind of lost my train of thought where I was going with this. Oh, the main part of this question ultimately was due process. Due process is the right to be heard, and through the process, ultimately, of under the rules of common law in a court of justice. That's due process. Town courts cannot give you due process. Any court that's operating with civil law cannot give you due process. Anything that has code violations or statutes, one and the same anyway, or regulations, has nothing to do with we the people, but they apply it upon us. And that's not due process. You cannot have due process through that. So I guess that's the, let me see if I, there's, let's see what I have here. Maybe I could read something out of Black's Law if I can find it relatively quick. Let's see. Due process. Here we go. Due process law of law. This is synonymous with due process of law or the law of the land, and it means law in its regular course of administration through courts of justice. By the law of the land is more clearly intended the general law, a law which hears before it condemns, which proceeds upon inquiry and renders judgment only after a trial. That's due process. Again, we get back to running through the process of under the rules of common law. It is law in its regular course of administration through courts of justice is due process. Again, let's see if there's another. Amendment 5 of the Constitution of the United States, no person shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Again, that brings us back to courts of justice, the right to be heard under the rules of common law. So that's pretty much it. It's pretty simple. Right now, I'm not aware of any court that gives due process, none at all. I haven't found one. So we have a major problem, and that's the purpose of National Liberty Alliance. That's why we're here, to try to bring these things back under the law of the land, to bring the courts back to the people. So anyway, next question. If there isn't.
Well, John, I don't have any more questions for you tonight.
Any announcements?
None at all.
Okay. All right, we're going to be ready to move on our course this Saturday. The first session is going to be at 12 noon on Saturday. That's Eastern Standard Time. There is plenty of information up on our website concerning this. Let's see if I can pull that up real quick. And I'll probably upgrade some information here, so people should keep an eye on this. Come under Education Starts Here, down to Court Access and the Common Law. Click on that tab. And on that tab, you'll find all the information update. We're going to be on February 25th. It's going to be the first day we're going to start. It's going to go from noon to 1:30. Course duration is still to be determined. I'm going to give a rough idea. Between 12 and 16 weeks, I think it's going to take, so 12 to 16 lessons. And any other information I'll put up here, there will be a code to get into the room. The course will be taught in this room right here. We will put a code out. Anybody that has an application in, they'll get a code in the email this week. And that'll give you access to get into the course. So when you come here, just by coming any other Monday night, although you'd be here on a Saturday, of course, but just like coming in here on any Monday, the only difference is in order to get into the room, you're going to be asked for that code, and you'll have to have that code to get in. We will be sending out a test email in a day or two, and just to the administrators, to the people who have signed up for the course. And we would want you to respond to that test email just by clicking, respond, reply, and put in, something like, I got it. It'd be really helpful to just put that in the subject line, delete whatever's in the subject line and just put, I got it, and, reply, I got it, and send it out. And then we'll go through our list to make sure that everyone that we have an application on is getting that email. pay attention to the email from this point forward. To anybody that is in the course, the vital information will be given from time to time. If something needs to be understood or known before, the Saturday coming up, you need to be paying attention to your email. Anybody that wants to get into the course, you can still get into the course. There's still a little time to get in. This course will be good really all the time anyway. It'll always be available because we're going to be recording this. Just to give you a quick picture of some of the things we've been doing here, an idea of this course and what we'll be covering, which is really everything in court process. And if you come under Education Starts Here, anybody that has been clicked in, you'll be able to get in and see this stuff right now, and you can peruse it. Over here, you come to the right side. Again, only people who are signed up in the course will see these two pages. Let me first click on the recorded video page. Every time we have a lesson, it'll be uploaded either at the end of the day or the following morning, but it'll be uploaded rather quickly. Right now, they're just blank pages here, but it's going to be starting with introduction, and it'll be the first chapter one, chapter two, and so on and so forth, all the way through this process. Some chapters might have two sessions in order to get through, so in other words, two Saturdays. And that's why I'm not too sure how many sessions it's going to be yet. But anyway, also in the same place, you'll find here on the first one above this is Court Access Documents and Forms. And this lays out the entire course pretty much. I'm going to make this really, really simple. I remember when I tried to come through this process and I learned from a lawyer through, what was the name of that thing, the course? I'll think about it. I'll make mention of it. Anyway, it was taught by a lawyer.
Jurisdictionary,
thank you. It was done by a lawyer, and, it wasn't very well, at least when I took it. I took it early on when he first came out with it. Now he's kind of updated, changed things around. I don't know if it's better. But it was a little confusing. It was kind of confusing. It took a while to really figure a lot out, and even after I went through everything, I still had a lot to learn. So everything that I have learned, I put together in this course, and I'm making it extremely easy for people. And we'll be going through that, of course, as we start on the first course as we go through this. But court access in the common law course is a table. This is a table of contents, and basically, our course will be following this procedure or process or this table of contents, I guess you'd say, starting off with an introduction, then the essentials. That'd be chapter one for the essentials. Chapter two would be the pleadings, working through pleadings. Chapter three, courses of action. Chapter four, defenses. Five is motions, six is memorandums of law, seven is the rules, U.S. codes, nine is ready for trial, 10, appeal and enforcement, 11, extraordinary writs, 12, case examples, and we got some really powerful cases. I've been working on this for years, and these are all cases that work, okay? Of course, you're still going to get, judges that's going to still resist you, at least this side of devolution, I guess you'd say. Once we get onto the other side, it'll be very powerful to use. If you have an IRS problem, I got a very powerful, extremely powerful IRS case that I put together, and I've already won one case with that. I'm working on a second and a third case on IRS right now. So I'm hoping to have three wins, and I should. but in any event, then we get into NLA and the Committee of Safety, and then reading some materials and online resources and so on. We also, understanding Microsoft Word is very important. I do a special, in the beginning of this course, I'm going to do a quick rundown on how to set a paper up and what parts of Microsoft Word you need to understand and work with, like how to put in footnotes, how to set the margins, the font size, the spaces. I'm going to go through all that process, everything you need to know that I, things that I do all the time when I write a court case. But you should go and take this. Here's a course here, Word for Beginners. Anybody that's got access to this right now, you should start working on Word for Beginners. It's a complete course. I haven't taken it, but in any event, you know, I know enough of Word to get through, so anything that I do. But if I do come up with something that I want to learn and I don't know, which has been quite some time since I've come to that kind of a situation, I just go on to, you know, YouTube and, you know, Google the situation with Microsoft Word, and you can find it quickly. But anyway, this is a good course. You can take it right now. So there's two courses here. Then also, people should learn to use PowerPoints. If you have a really big case and something that you really like to explain to the jury, a situation, you put together a PowerPoint. We'll talk a little bit about that in the course, presenting through a PowerPoint. So anybody who doesn't know how to use PowerPoint, again, you should take this course and any other course you can find. You can find them on YouTube, lots of courses on YouTube. But these are the ones I found. They looked pretty good, and I stuck them up here so people have access to it. So anyway, lots of information in here, and you'll see the way I set this up. We're going to follow through the course with this, and you'll be able to have access and memory of where all these things are, so you can draw upon them when you want to get involved in a court case and do your paperwork and go through your motions and everything that's involved with that. So anyway, again, this course is going to start this Saturday. There's still time to get in. But again, if people are having problems paying for the $125, I'm charging $125 for the course, which is super, super cheap. You're going to get a course, in my opinion, far superior than what a lawyer would get going to school, spending, $200,000, a couple of years in school to get an education. But they'll be teaching you civil law, of course. It'll be far superior than that. We're going to really get down deep into how the process works, how to write your pleadings, how to work on motions, how to get your causes of action, how to write a really powerful paper, and so on. And the more time you spend in this class and with the homework that I give you, then the better you're going to be at writing a court case. You know, it took a while for me to kind of get it to write a court case. You know, I think I'm pretty decent at it at this point in time. And I want to teach people and show them real easy. But again, it's reading a lot is really that gives you the knowledge and the ability and understanding to write a court case. Reading other cases, that's the key. And I'm going to give you some great cases to read. And through that, you'll get a lot of ideas on how to put a court case together. But anyway, people who have a problem, maybe can't come up with $125. There have been a few people. You know, all they have to do is give what they can, get out the application, and if you can only put $50 down now or $25 or whatever it is, just write down on the bottom of the paper in the form, the application form, that they enclose the check for $25, and give me your payment plan, you know, $25 a month, $50 a month, or whatever. Again, it's only $125, so it's not a lot of money. Just get that in, and you can pay as you go, as you can. And again, this course will always be available. People have access to this course at all times. It'll be indefinite. So you'll be able to go back and review. You're going to see how I'm going to marry each one of these courses as far as the video and audio that we're going to be, taken as we go forward with this. We're going to record everything. And so what you're going to see and hear in this room is going to be recorded completely, and you'll have access to that at all times, and you'll be able to go, well, if you have a situation with motions, let's say you were working on motions and you're trying to figure some things out, you'd come down to motions in Chapter 5. You can listen to the course on that again, you know, run through the video, and you have all of the information on motions here that you would put together. So again, you know, I know for the longest time I was working out of a book. I don't work too much out of a book anymore, but I put together a book when I took the jurisdictionary course, and you know, I would constantly go in there looking for causes of actions, and then some things with motions, or this or that, or the other thing. And that's how you get through it. You know, after a while, you kind of get a memory of a lot of things. And, you know, in the more cases you're right, the more experience you have. So, anyway, again, everything will be available at all times. All people can download everything off of these pages. It's pretty easy to download. You just click a right click on anything and click on Save Link As and put it wherever you want, and it'll download that particular item, whatever it is, okay? Or you could just come to the page anytime you want, and you'll have access to this page and the videos. You can also download the videos, too. That's pretty simple also. So always have access. Anybody who wants to start this course 3 months from now, 6 months from now, a year from now, they'll get the very same thing as anyone else will get. The only difference is we'll have some open forums at the end of each chapter, and you know, but people can come to the open forums on Mondays and ask their questions if they've taken the course after it's already been recorded, or at any time, really. Even people who are in the course, if they have any questions that they want to ask, they can ask on a Monday night program. All right, anyway, that's that for that. Let's see. Get back to the welcome page, I guess. Okay, I guess we'll go right over to Q&A tonight. So we'll take our first caller. By the way, is Brent in today? Has anyone seen Brent? If Brent's in, let me know if he comes in, okay? Okay, we're going to take our first caller. It looks like it's Walter from New York. Let's see if I can get that going. There you go. You got the mic, Walt from New York.
Yes, John. I want to ask you a question about the parole board in New York State. I forgot the name of this city right now. It's right here. Hold on, please. Groveland Correctional Facility. Relatives of mine's son was denied parole. There were 13 people there that were before the board to get parole. He was the only one that was denied. The other 12 were released. Now, I know some of the things, even for him to be in jail, he was denied due process. He was never given a jury trial. There was nobody there at the parole hearing, even the rules. The mother says that she's seen the rules, but she
was he indicted?
I don't know all the paperwork on that right now.
That's the important thing to do, is find out if he's been indicted, number one. Number two, a criminal case requires a jury. Number three, the jury, in order to convict, has to be a common law jury. All those three, it sounds like all three of those things did not come to play. You'll get people in these town courts where these town judges have no power or authority to put anyone in jail, yet they do all day long. If only the sheriffs were educated, then they would know and understand enough to resist these prisoners by letting them go. You know, when a town court sends a prisoner down to the jail, in the county jail, if it's coming from a town court, the sheriff should just release them, because it's a nisi prius court. They have no power, no authority. There is no due process. Plus, everything they do is on codes. So it's statute.
I want to add, John, I heard you say something maybe a couple weeks ago. This decision here was made by the parole board. It doesn't say who the names of the people are. And it also says another person that reviewed the record is a, let me see what they call this person, a supervisor offender rehab coordinator. But so you were talking about doing a quote rental with these people, get their oaths and bond.
Yep.
How would I do that?
Well, first of all, look, at first you got to get a little bit more educated to understand what's going on, because no matter what you do, there's going to be a response and you need to respond back. And then there's going to be another response and you're going to respond back. So it's not just as simple as filing just one paper. You have to have a little bit of knowledge and understand what the process is going to be. But let me just ask a couple of questions, because there may be another way to go about this. If you can tell me basically, well, let's start off with the court. What court was he tried in?
He was in several court cases. It was all linked together.
Was it a town court? Was it a county court? Was it a state court? Was it a federal court? What kind of a court?
Genesee Town Court, Geneseo.
A town court. Okay. Well, right there it's an nisi prius court. And he had no trial?
I was there as a witness. I wanted to represent him.
Was there a trial with a jury?
Well, the attorney was there. They're going to have a jury trial. He asked for it. And the attorney there said we have to do more discovery, so he never ended up getting a jury trial. It was just a...
Okay. Was there an indictment?
I don't think so.
What was he arrested for? Can you tell us?
There's a couple of different things. I'm not really not prepared to tell you everything because of memory, okay. But I had to tell you some of the stuff. Okay, one of the things was... one day, well, his mother was traveling to another town, leaving him there alone. He was 19, with his uncle that was 80 years old, and she was supposed to take care of him. So she finally comes. He was visiting a boyfriend 20 miles away. So she comes back just to get things and go back and leave him. So he wouldn't let her go, and she got mad. She said, if you don't let me go, I'm calling the police. So he took her phone that was on the table, and he threw it on the ground and broke the phone, the glass. So after 2 weeks... that her boyfriend in the other town, 20 miles away, told her to call the police against him for that. So the police went to the door, invited himself in because the young man didn't know how to respond, and he admitted he broke the phone and he was placed under arrest for that, a petty thing like that.
Well, that's civil. First of all, that's a civil case to begin with. It's not a criminal case, number one. Number two, there's no... Look at... You can. This is a slam dunk case. Slam dunk. You could take this right into the state court and have that whole thing thrown out if you know how to do it. I strongly suggest to take the course. I can't write the papers for you, but I can teach you how to write the papers. You know, it may take maybe a month or two going through the course to get through enough knowledge in order to deal with this problem. And you know, once you get enough understanding of how things are working, you get a framework of things and access to the necessary information in order to write these papers and deal with this problem, then I can give you some advice and some thoughts and some ideas, and I can say, well, this, that, and the other thing. But I'll tell you right now, and I can help you even write the papers to some degree. But here's the thing, though. You know, if there was no indictment, it's unlawful. Matter of fact, I would sue for a whole bunch of money, you know. Me personally, $1,000 face value every single day I'm in jail. Face value in silver coins, Morgan silver coins. That's about $26,000, roughly speaking, today. A day is what I would charge for my liberty being taken away, bare minimum. And so, I mean, right now there's a good lawsuit here. And you can sue the court, and you can sue all of the officers of the court, everybody involved. You should pull their bonds. There's a lot you can do here. They have no indictment. It's not a crime to begin with, okay? Everything sounds like it's hearsay to some degree. But who cares? You break a phone, big deal. Huh?
John, there was another issue. It was also strange. Here's what happened. He was in his mother's car, and he pulled off into one of those gas stations.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, the police showed up. I guess witnesses said he was weaving on the road. He refused to take a blood test, but he wasn't out on the road. This came after. So they said, well, I forgot what they said. They wanted to do something. He refused to do it. So they took him to the hospital, and when he was in the hospital, against his will, he did a blood test, and he found alcohol in his blood. That's the other thing.
Okay, well, look at it. No, this whole thing is just, it's nothing, okay?
Right.
Again, there's nothing here. Let's go back to an indictment. There's no indictment. Let's go back to a court of justice. It's a town court, Nisi Prius. They have no power, no authority. Let's go back to the fact that they didn't have a jury trial. He was denied a trial. Every one of these things is a violation of an unalienable right, okay, a right of due process, being incarcerated. I mean... Your son can end up being a millionaire with this by the time you get to the end of this thing.
Well,
if you go through the
my son, my former wife had another relationship after we were divorced, a long time afterwards. But this thing about the quorum rental, can I send something to ask these people to show they have an oath of office and their bond, their insurance?
But you don't know where to go after that. That's the problem. Yeah, you could get a quorum rental. We have a copy of a quorum rental up on our website, but you're only going to get yourself, you have to have a plan. You have a case that you can have a really good plan here, and you can get them all. It's going to take a little time, and your son's going to sit in jail another couple months, let's say. But time, if you get educated enough, if you really buckle down and do everything I tell you, you know, as far as your homework is concerned, because, look, people will get out of this course whatever they want. If they want to be a great lawyer and really be able to handle any kind of a case, I'm going to give you enough information to be able to do that. If you want to just be able to, you know, defend yourself a little bit here and there and work through problems, you know, again, you'll be as good as you want to be. That's the key. But I can probably get you enough information. In just 2 months, you can probably get through enough information to be able to now start a process. I'm, like I said, it's probably going to be a three-month course, 12 to maybe 16 weeks at the most. It could be 4 months. I'm not sure how many lessons it's going to be. But in any event, you know, in within 2 or 3 months, definitely 2 months, you'll be deep enough into it. You can get papers together. You can get a plan together, and I can lay out to you the plan. What you do this first, and then this second, and this third. When they respond to this, well, this is how you'll go. You'll be able to write those papers, and to some degree, I can take a look at them to give you a little thoughts and some, you know, opinions on the paper. But you know, again, you got a lot here. You got a lot here. You did, this book should not be in jail.
Okay, just two more quick things. There's supposed to be he can appeal this. He's got
how long has it been in jail
for? Left to appeal it. And also, can I have his mother, Jeannie? She was going to be on the show to maybe talk to you if you had any questions, but her phone's not working tonight for some reason. So can I have her? Her name is Jeannie. Can I have her contact you?
Well, I'd prefer if she called me on a Monday night. How about next Monday?
I'll have her call you on a Monday night then.
Yeah, because, you know, it's difficult. I got so many things going on. It's just time is really hard for me. And, you know, we have a lot of members, and I get a lot of email, and, just, you know, it's just I'm busy all the time. But that's why I'm here on every Monday, to be able to talk to people. And
right.
Available.
And I'll tell Jeannie to call you, and thank you for the information.
All right, but bear in mind, you know, I can't really... Yeah, again, I can give you some thoughts and ideas, but it's in order to do anything, you have to have some knowledge here. And you'll be able to get enough knowledge, like I said, in 2 weeks. That's the key. But here's the thing, and I'm repeating myself on this. Look it, no indictment. Sounds like there was no indictment. These town courts never get indictments. I mean, I remember a case, we kept going, this one guy kept going back and forth, you know, month after month to the court, and they kept saying, because he says, there's no indictment, you can't do nothing. And they were going to pursue that, but they never could get to the indictment because there was no real crime there. Okay, these town courts, and they don't have the authority to try a case, to put anyone, to incarcerate anyone. These town courts are called nisi prius courts, which means unless first. Means you have to first have something going on that puts you under the authority of equity, or in their case, they call it civil law. They have no authority to put you under because you don't work for a government agency, and you're not doing anything commercial, any commercial activities. So they have no power or authority over you because they're not courts of law. They're these previous courts. And people go to jail all day long. And, you know, who was it? Let me think. I can't think of the judge's name. It's back a while, I think in the 80s. I think it was a Reagan judge that was put up. Bork. Judge Bork. Judge Bork said, he was a pretty intelligent judge. He never made it in to become a Supreme Court justice, but he was a good choice. And one of the things he said, he says, these people, a lot of people go to jail. I think 80% of the people in jail, particularly, you know, in the county jails, 80% of the people in jail are there only because they opened their mouth. In other words, they gave them authority by participating. Okay? You have to, deny jurisdiction to these courts, and you have to know how to do it, and that's the key.
John, what does a legitimate indictment look like, the document? What must it have on it, the document?
Well, it's got to say that it's an indictment and signed by the foreman of a grand jury, and that goes through a state court. It doesn't go through a town court. And if you'll notice, they'll give you, they don't do indictments in town courts, but what they do is they try to tell, you know, they'll set, okay, we'll give you a jury trial, and they'll bring 7 people in. Well, that's not a jury. A jury is a jury of 12 plus 1. So that begin with, the numbers are all off. But there also, there's no authority there because there's no indictment.
Well, John, if they denied him the grand jury, they said he was going to give one, but they never did, that means there couldn't have been an indictment, correct? If there's no jury, right?
Well, they'll run juries without an indictment sometimes, but the thing is the town court can't get an indictment because there wouldn't be no execution there. They're not courts of justice. You, only a county court and a state court can pursue criminal charges. And I'm not sure about a county court, but state courts are really where the criminal charges take place and the action takes place, and that's where the indictments would come through that. They would be under the auspices of a state court, which is in every county, okay? County courts don't hear criminal, and the town courts can't hear criminal either.
So an indictment can't be just by the prosecutor, but wait a minute, the grand jury can send it to the prosecutor if they don't want to take it, right?
No. If the grand jury says no, there is no indictment.
Okay, well, what I'm going to do is, John, thank you so much. I will get back to you, and I'm going to tell Jeannie to get the call next Monday night.
Yeah, what you want to do, though, is go look to get a copy of the indictment. You want to shake this court up, go to the court and say, I want a copy of the indictment of this kid. Who is he to
he's
you?
22 years. He's 22, 23 years old now.
Okay, but who is he to you? Is he a relationship in any way?
No, he's my former wife's son in a marriage after my divorce, a long time after that. Okay. He's not my son.
Okay, but he's sort of like a stepson to some degree, I presume, or something?
Yes. Something like that, yes, yes.
Yeah. The thing is this. You go down to court, you want a copy of, first of all, the trial. You know, what took place in the trial. You want to get a total copy of everything. You also want to get a copy of the indictment. They're going to tell you there isn't one, okay? And we'll within the first month of the course, you'll be able to write a notice and demand, and that's where you'll start with a notice and demand to the courts, okay? And that notice of demand to the courts is really looking for certain information, and that'll become also sort of like a quo warranto, whereas you're looking for their oaths, their bonds, and their financials, you know? And you'll learn to do that within the first month of the course, and that's where you'll start. And then, you know, it's going to be a little process of time, but you're going to shake these people up, okay? And they may release them only because you're coming through with power and knowledge. And that's the key. You have to walk in and they have to, you know, wonder about you, because you need to understand how the process works and you need to exercise the process. They see that you know those things, that you'll know more than they will know, as a matter of fact, especially the people in the towns, because they don't know anything. And but I'd start digging information. You get the judge's name, get the prosecutor, get the information on the trial. You want a copy of the trial. You want the copy of the indictment, a copy of the charges. And here's the other thing. I'll bet you there isn't even an affidavit for this whole thing. Was there any affidavit? Without an affidavit, there is no trial. Even the police reports, they're not affidavits. It's just the police report. Even though it's signed, they say it's sworn to. That's not a sworn statement. That doesn't hold up in court. That has no power. A sworn statement, it has to be done in front of a notary or a judge or a magistrate. And their signature has to be on it, too. This is a sworn statement. So there's nothing. They've violated so much. There's a lot. Look, there's a lot of restitution that could be gotten here. A lot.
Well, thank you, John.
Anyway,
I'm not
talk another time. Get into the course.
John, I'm not prepared that much to tell you because she just contacted me about 3 weeks ago, and it's all behind me, so I have to catch up now again, get back into the files, get involved again. That's why I can't tell you much.
All right. Well, anyway, either she or you should get into the course in order to deal with this thing. Otherwise,
right.
You know, I can tell you to go do a notice and demand, but then what do you do next? You know, you have to understand what you're chasing them for, too, you know?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Thank you very much, John.
You got
it. Thank you.
All right. We'll take our next caller then. Thanks. Let's take Ross, it looks like. Ross, you got the mic. Go right ahead.
Hello, John. I haven't received an email for the code yet. When you'll be sending that out soon?
That'll be coming out this week. First, we're going to do a test run to make sure everyone's getting the emails on the list. And then you'll have to and again, I'm going to send an email out probably tomorrow to tell everyone that we're sending it. Well, actually, I may just send the email out and making the point on the email. I'll keep it very short, maybe two or three sentences, that you must respond to this email so that we know you're getting it. We're going to be sending you a code. And we'll send the code out maybe Wednesday or something. But sometime this week, we'll get it out. Definitely before Wednesday, anyway.
Okay.
Anything else?
Nope.
Okay. Thanks, Ross. Okay, hey, by the way, if anybody wants to get into the queue, if you're coming in on a regular phone, star 6 and a 1. If you're coming in through some app or a browser, there should be a button there to click on to get into the queue. Okay, take our next question. It's a wireless caller, it looks like. 618, is that a 618? Looks like 618. You got the mic there. Area code.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, what's your first name and your state?
Dwayne, I'm from Illinois.
Okay, Dwayne from Illinois. Go right ahead, Dwayne.
So I've been feeding our county sheriff some of your information. I gave him the handbook on county sheriff, the common law handbook, and some other stuff. And so I asked him last time I was at a county board meeting. I go to those just for political theater. And the so I asked him if he read it. He had read it, but he had issues. He had a question I couldn't answer. Mm-hmm. And so he asked, you know, first he said that if he went around the state's attorney, you know, then it would be difficult for him to, like, get any case that he wanted to go through because he'd be making an adversary of her.
Well,
it's not a usual situation. That's an extreme situation, but you have the power to do that. Mm-hmm. And then his next question would be, well, after that, then what does that look like, you know? So say he brings the evidence before a grand jury, he gets an indictment. Now it goes to a petit jury, but he doesn't have a state's attorney prosecuting. So how does that process work in a petit jury situation? You know, obviously the sheriff doesn't want to act as a lawyer.
There is a court process, okay?
Okay.
And once those court processes are executed, they cannot be denied. Let's take it this way. It's going to be an uphill battle for a sheriff, and I understand the concern of a sheriff coming to a knowledge and realizing, well, hey, you know, I'm going to be beat up pretty bad on this. He needs help. Okay, what I would say, I would suggest to that individual, first of all, find out if you got the book. If you didn't get the book, you know, buy him a book. We have Campaign for Constitutional Sheriffs going on.
Right. I bought a couple of different books,
Hold on. Have you bought the book, Government by Consent?
Yes, I have.
Okay, so that's the book that needs to get to him, okay? In that book, there's two ways to get the book. You can buy that book and get it to him yourself, but then...
I have copies of those books to give to him.
But... Okay, well, there are letters that need to go into that book, okay? And one is from us, okay? It's a one-page letter. And another one is from Sheriff Darr, okay? And that's a powerful letter coming from another sheriff. And the thing is this, and Sheriff Darr is working with other sheriffs. He's gathering other sheriffs like-minded, and he's working to get constitutional sheriffs. It's one of the things he's doing. And there are other sheriffs involved with it. He needs to join a group of sheriffs that's pursuing the law of the land and want to return back to the law of the land. So I would say get in touch with Sheriff Darr. Maybe Sheriff Darr may know some sheriffs in Illinois that is working on this also. Because they want to get together, two or three or four sheriffs getting together. Sheriffs should educate other sheriffs in the counties nearby them, by getting the books for these sheriffs, and they're coming in with power. Now, once you got two or three or four sheriffs working together and backing each other up, that's when they can get bold, okay? And it's very simple. Well, all the sheriff has to do, but it does take a bold individual. It has to take a person that's got some backbone. And you can only get that through knowledge. You know, the more knowledge you get and the surety of what you're doing, then that's more power and you're able to go forward and do what you want to do and got to do. But all you got to do, all the sheriff has to do, for instance, if he wanted to get, let's say he wanted to pursue an indictment on someone. Okay, I mean, what exactly was he talking about? He's concerned about the county attorney, right? The prosecutor, correct?
Not the state's attorney.
State. Well, usually it's on a county level, though, but because each county has a prosecutor. But yeah, it would be a state, I guess you'd call it. It's in the state courts. Okay, the thing is this. If he wanted to pursue an issue, all he's got to do is walk into the court, see the clerk, and say, hey, to the clerk, you know, the court clerk, when's the next time the grand jury is going to be in session? Oh, they're going to be in session next Monday. They're coming in session for a week or whatever the case may be. And he has himself put onto the list. I want to come in and talk to the grand jury. Well, you know, they can't refuse him. And if they did refuse him, that's, you know, the sheriff can actually arrest the clerk for refusal of the process of the system that he's running through. But the point is he'd be, trying to think of the word here, it would be obstruction of justice, okay? So he could actually arrest the clerk, or at least threaten the arrest of the clerk, and then take whoever the other clerk next to and say, well, you know, put me on the list. In other words, he can get on the list. What they'd probably do is call the district attorney, and the district attorney would call the sheriff and try to, tell him he can't do it or whatever the case may be. Again, a sheriff with knowledge and the backbone will tell him, hey, I got the right to do this. This is my duty. And I can call a grand jury. I want to call a grand jury. Well, what do you want to talk to the grand jury about? Well, that's between me and the grand jury. He doesn't have to give any information. Then all he's got to do is show up and get access into the grand jury, bring his case before the grand jury, and ask for an indictment. And once they give him a written indictment, that's it. And if the prosecutor wants to sit in on that, he can throw him out, because he definitely wouldn't want anyone to sit in on that. The only one that should be in there are the individuals that's being called as witnesses before the grand jury, and that would be one at a time. They wouldn't be collectively. And the only other person that really that could be in there is maybe an interpreter and, of course, someone keeping a record, a stenographer. And, a coroner can be involved in that, so they could be in there if it's a murder case or, homicide. And that's it. You know, he needs to take control, but it is hard for them to take control. I understand. He does need more education. That book.
His main question was, then what after that? After it goes to a petit jury. Obviously, he's
Well, if he has enough information, enough evidence, in order to bring a case into the grand jury and get his indictment, that's the beginning. Now a case has to go forward. They cannot deny it. Now, if that prosecutor tries to throw the case off, if he feels that the prosecutor is going to try to throw this case out, do things not to really prosecute strongly, or whatever, however you want to say that, if that's the case, then he can go sit in the court and see what's going on. And if he suspects that, he can go get an indictment on that prosecutor. You know, the prosecutor's got to do his job. And also he can remove the prosecutor if he's got enough evidence, and have someone that's coming in there. You know, at some point, if there's conflicts of interest, because maybe it's a judge he's going after or something, so there's a conflict of interest with these prosecutors, he can get an outside special prosecutor. And that could be any kind of a lawyer that's really, trained and can become a prosecutor for whatever purpose, a special prosecutor. There's ways to get around it. It's an uphill battle, though. I do agree. The key thing is for the sheriff to start educating himself, and if he wants to be a good sheriff, and start pushing the common law, and working with other sheriffs, because that's where the power comes from. As we get enough sheriffs on board, in the counties, especially around them, that's when things will take a different turn, and we'll start getting back to courts of law again. But right now, they're outlaw courts. There is no justice.
Okay. So that was his main question, is like, what happens after the indictment? Once you've alienated the state's attorney, that they're not going to want to work with you, so he can appoint his own attorney to prosecute the case.
Well, yeah, if he suspects that prosecutor, this is a good question for Brent. I don't know if Brent's in the room right now. I'm sure if he was in here, someone will let me know. When Brent's around, this is a good question for him, because he's got much more knowledge of the process, and he's working with the sheriffs right now. Matter of fact, that's a good guy to make contact with is Brent, because Brent will tie him in with sheriffs also, as much as Sheriff Dar is.
Like I read before, like the jury, members of the jury can interrogate the witnesses. They can ask questions and stuff.
You talk about the grand jury or the trial jury?
Petit jury.
Yes, jurors can ask questions at some point. I'm not too knowledgeable on that. Again, I think Brent would be much more, because he's got the experience of the court with that kind of a situation. I don't, not with the juries. But I believe the jurors can ask questions. It would be at an appropriate time. They'd have to alert the magistrate that they've got a couple of questions to ask or something. I'm not sure how that would work, but I'm sure they can.
So the members of the jury have a lot more freedom to ask questions, interrogate witnesses in a grand jury.
To some degree. Well, the grand jury for sure can do it, okay? The Petit jury, it's got to be a little more organized. I'm not sure how that would work out, to be honest with you. I don't have enough experience on that.
Okay.
But again,
it was all hypothetical. The sheriff would just ask him, you know, like, well, what do I do after I've alienated the state's attorney? It's a small county, you know.
Yeah.
They all try to work together.
Yep. It's a good old boys club. Yep. Yeah, it's
right.
A problem. It's
exactly.
A major problem. Again, here's what I would say. You know, not that he could do much right now until he gets enough knowledge, so he needs to generate knowledge. And that requires his time and learning. Again, the book Government by Consent is the perfect book for him to begin with, because it lays everything out. Okay?
Right.
Connecting with a group of sheriffs that are like-minded and trying to bring the law of the land back into play on the county level and empower the sheriff. You know, he's the chief law enforcer. Whatever he says goes concerning the law. He is it. He can walk on any scene and take control of any crime scene or any scene at any time. But the thing is that he needs to connect with other sheriffs. He needs to get connected with a group. And as they get enough power, enough sheriffs going in his state and working together on this, that's when things... But meanwhile, this is a time for education. He may not be able to execute the things that he's starting to see that he should, because he just doesn't have enough backing. But yeah, he definitely will be alien. They will despise him. There's no getting away from that.
We have a Sheriff Mack coming in to do a seminar for the state.
Sheriff Mack could be very helpful in this issue, because he's already done the kind of thing and worked with other sheriffs and got involved in a federal court case where they ruled that the sheriff, and this is not the only time they ruled this, but that the sheriff was the chief law enforcer of the county. There's no one higher than him. Whatever he says goes. You see, he's a law enforcer. The other police officers are code enforcers. He's a law enforcer. As a matter of fact, police officers make citizens arrest. They really don't have the power to arrest unless they're deputized, and they're not deputized. But they're empowered by the city or the town or the county or whatever the case may be, and the state. But ultimately, the final decision is when they bring it to the sheriff. That's when the real arrest takes place. That's when the lawful arrest takes place. And that is part of the process that should take place. They're delivered to the county jail, and that's when the process takes place. That, you know, and that's where the sheriff can start to, you know, loosen people that are coming in and, you know, deny taking them in if they're coming out of, you know, if they're coming out of town courts. The town courts don't have the authority to give due process. They can't give due process, so they have no authority to arrest and imprison, incarcerate, or fine. So,
okay.
All right, that's it.
Well, you know, I mean, Sheriff Mack's coming, and so we have the rogue governor Pritzker, who's trying to take away our guns. So we had 90 sheriffs out of 102 counties that basically signed the letters, said that they were not going to enforce his unconstitutional law. So actually, the governor's helping us to organize the sheriffs in this state.
Yeah, the same thing happened here in New York. We have 60, let me think, is it 60? I think we have 60 counties. And of the 60 counties, I think we had something, well, we have some counties that don't have a sheriff. We have 7 counties without a sheriff. But all the sheriffs of the other counties agreed and came to the same conclusion, with the exception of one or two. So it did kind of bring them together. So that's a great situation that they're in a situation already. These sheriffs need to get books. I'll tell you, you need to get a bunch of people together and get books. What I'm going to do, I'm going to post the letters that we have, one from Sheriff Darr and one from National Liberty Alliance that we put in the books when we send them to sheriffs. And instead of me sending the books out to the sheriffs, you know, people can buy them and they can put the papers in and deliver it themselves. But
my issue was, you know, I bought a $50 book, and if I can't get him to read the handbook, the sheriff's handbook, because he's too busy, if I hand him that great big thick book, he's just, his eyes going to roll back in his head, and he's going to put it on the shelf and never look at it.
Maybe when the election comes up, it's time to look for another sheriff, because he doesn't have the will.
We've had an election, so we got a new sheriff.
Well, if he doesn't have the will to want to learn what his job is all about and the power and the authority that he has and the fact that he's the chief law enforcer, he needs to understand the law to enforce it. If he's not willing to learn this, what good is he? And again, you get yourself a committee of safety going in there, and you get enough people involved with that, 20, 30, 50, 100. At some point in time, you'll come to 100 rather quickly over time, and after that, you'll really explode. But at that point in time, then you got a lot of clout. And if the sheriff, and you go deal with the sheriff, we have a plan on how to talk to the sheriff, how to approach the sheriff, when to approach the sheriff, what paperwork together to approach the sheriff. And so the whole plan is out there underneath Start a Committee of Safety right here. If anybody's looking at the desktop here, come down here, Start a Committee of Safety, Start to Organize. You click here, Start here, and you follow this breadcrumb trail here and create a Committee of Safety. And get some power and authority going. Now you go deal with the sheriff. Now you're going to tell the sheriff what to do. He's going to see you as constituents to begin with. And he's going to understand who you are because of the paperwork that you're going to generate and give to him. And he's going to take you very serious. And if he doesn't, then you're going to get rid of him. And if he's really that bad, then you can get rid of him in 90 days. You can do a recall. You get 50 or 100 people in your county working on this, you can easily do a recall on a sheriff, okay, and pull him out of office in 90 days, get a special election going, get another sheriff in play. Or even just have him removed, and the undersheriff would take place until another election could take place, which usually could be rather quickly for a vacancy of that type anyway. And so that's what you may need to do, you know. So if he's not willing to learn what his job is, because
He said he read the handbooks. He read them, and, you know, he had questions.
He asked
a question I couldn't answer.
That's not sufficient. That handbook is just basics, you know. I mean, it's a good handbook to hand out to his deputies and so on, but the real education is a lot more than that. The education is the government by consent book. That's the real education for all of us, really, but it's definitely for sheriffs.
Okay.
And, you know, the book, you can get the hardcover book even cheaper than the paperback, and it's a much better book. It's really solid. It's more durable, and it's cheaper. It's $39. You know, my other book, I was put in a position that's selling $45. So, you know, it's a few dollars more. It's not a lot more, but nevertheless, hardcover book is much better.
Right.
You can get that on Amazon. But I'm going to put together, I don't know if I have the letters here. Let's see real quick. Let me get to the welcome page here. And should have been a little bit down. Or maybe it's on, I know we have it on the right side. Getting the sheriff a book. Campaign for Constitutional Sheriffs, we're calling it. Okay, this is it here. Campaign for Constitutional Sheriffs. Let me click on that. Okay, you go by. Here's a letter for Sheriff that Sheriff Darr wrote, and we have a letter. What I'm going to do is I'm going to do this a little different. I'm going to put both letters up here where you can download the letters and print them out and stick them in a book, and I'll let the people get them directly to their sheriffs. That'll take some load off me because right now I've been sending them out, and it takes a little time. So I'll work this page out a little bit different, though.
Okay, so you're talking about the open letter to the sheriff?
Well, there's two. There's a letter from Sheriff Darr, okay? And then there's a letter that we wrote, National Liberty Alliance. And those two letters introduce the sheriff to what's going on here. And of course, we put them inside the book, and you give the book with those two letters to the sheriff. You know, we have a process and a plan on how to approach the sheriff. The first order of business is your first meeting with the sheriff and giving him the book. Okay, you want to meet with the sheriff maybe another 30 or 60 days later. You want to get all your paperwork together. You want to get your charter together. You want to get some paperwork and get a seal, and you know, you want to put it together with a binder, and you go down to Staples and have that done. And all that paperwork is laid out under the Committee of Safety here, how to do this, you know, how to approach the sheriff. And then the second meeting is when you really get down to business. The first meeting is just giving him information, maybe 5 or 10 minutes. The next meeting is him coming to your meeting, and you have a special meeting concerning the sheriff there, and a lot of questions and answers, and you get to work with the sheriff. You know, the point is you want to get the sheriff on board with the Committee of Safety, because that's power too, you know. You get a big enough Committee of Safety, you get 100 people in your Committee of Safety, the sheriff, and he's connected to your meetings, you know, that'll empower him also, because now he feels he's got support. But other sheriffs are good too, next to like the counties next door. Okay, I'm going to move on to the next person here. All right?
Okay.
All right, thanks for the call. All right, let's take our next caller here. Is that Hawaii? Someone from Hawaii, 808?
Yeah, aloha.
How you doing? Aloha. What's your first name?
Hadassah.
Hadassah? Okay. How you doing, Hadassah? You got the mic. Go right ahead.
Oh, thanks. So I'm calling from, I think, one of the most corrupt states in the country, and I'm in Maui, which supposedly is one of the most corrupt counties in the country. So this has been an interesting, you know, session, because a lot of, I think, what you're referring to is just like how things are done and how things are done in such a way where they just completely hijack the system. And so my question is, I'm in a case right now, and it's so convoluted. I felt like God sent me in almost like a Trojan horse to go through the entire process to uncover, because I recorded every single conversation, and what I uncovered was that everyone is in on it, even the public defender. Public defender's office. Yeah. And so I went through about 5 different attorneys in my case, and finally what they do is they shift to court-appointed attorneys by the judge. And so they're private. But what I found was that they basically kept setting a jury trial. And I said to the judge, I want a trial by jury. The same thing. Well, my understanding is it's not the same thing. In the jury trial, he can change the facts of the case. And I asked my attorney that, and he said, "Yeah, he can."
This is obviously a criminal case.
Yeah, I had a situation. Well, and here's what's even crazier about that. So, there was a case that came down called State versus Abreu. So, this is the Hawaii State Supreme Court back in September 2022, and I'm surprised this came down with the verdict that it did, because, again, we're talking about one of the most corrupt systems of all time. So it decided that the state for some 40 plus years had been violating their own statute by indicting capital felony charges in preliminary hearings, and they needed to be done through an indictment before a grand jury in circuit court. So mine was done in a preliminary hearing through a complaint in that situation. But what's interesting is that, I have a couple questions. Once that came out, they said that they could submit a motion to dismiss the charges. Now, this is a Second Amendment case, which it saved my life. So I said, no, I said, this, I believe in the Second Amendment. All the violence stops. The robbery stops. I want the people of this state to hear the truth about the right. I don't even think it's a right anymore, the Second Amendment. I think it's a duty because I've seen so much corruption. And so I've noticed what they can do is they will schedule your jury trials. It's been over 700 plus days. I don't have one piece of discovery. They won't give me anything because everything I'm asking for would expose all their fraud.
Listen, if you want to pursue this, and you need to take the course because I tell you, all this stuff is illegal. You'll learn about it. You'll learn how to deal with it. You'll learn how to send quo warrantos out. You'll learn how to get discovery and enforce discovery. You'll learn how to bring it up to the federal court for cause. There's all kinds of things. The jury is corrupt. Not that the jury is corrupt, but they're tainted. Okay, the jury doesn't know anything but what the judge tells them and what the prosecutor might tell them. They know nothing, okay? And what they're being told is a lie and it's not the law, and they don't understand that they have that. You got to free the jury, okay, is what you got to do. Any case that I write now, I include a copy of the jury handbook and in order to free the jury. And as long as they don't, pull that out of my case, which they'd have to do that by, you know, a motion to have that stricken out of the case, and, I'd like to know why. That would be an argument in itself. But I could pull that right up into federal court for cause if they did. But the bottom line is that once you have that information in the case, when it comes to the trial, now you can educate the jury on the truth, that they have the power of denying the law or whatever it is that's coming up. Like, for instance, the Second Amendment case. I mean, you can really lay a lot of things out to them once you empower them. And they probably have codes that they're using against you, and codes don't trump the Constitution. The other thing is you got to see the indictment. And is the indictment signed? You also have to see the evidence, and there has to be sworn affidavits. Without a sworn affidavit, there is no trial. There's no court case, whether it's civil or criminal. There's got to be affidavits. You have to at least have one. So no affidavit, there is no trial. You know, that's a key thing with IRS cases. There's not one affidavit in the entire IRS case. There's nothing there. And right there is an argument. Right there is what you can have the whole case shut down with. And they'll never put an affidavit in an IRS case.
Okay, so here's where it got a little sticky. So they did do the indictment for the grand jury, but what I noticed was that, apparently my attorney was not allowed to be present. I'm not allowed to be present. And since the woman was threatening to kill me, this was someone showed up at my house. I'd never met her before. I was prepared. I'm disabled. So I was like, oh my gosh, this is like, I've never felt so safe in my life. Like I would never have the ability to stop this violence without this. And so I was so blown away, and I just thought the whole thing was a misunderstanding. She then goes and assaults the police officer. They end up designating her as the state complaining witness. So basically they want to come after the person that, felt like they had done the right thing and that had the right to exercise their Second Amendment. That's the jury trial would have exposed all of it. Let the people decide. But here's what they did. So because the Supreme Court case said that they had to drop the charges against me in the other case because it was preliminary trial, they did get the indictment, but they still kept prosecuting me in the old case. So I asked for the transcript because I was like, if you look at I think it's the book.
Are you on a computer? Can you see my desktop?
No, I'm on a phone.
Oh, okay, because on the computer I'm showing a paper here as an example for compelling discovery. They got to give you everything. So here's a motion for discovery. I have the wrong notes here, but this is about discovery, an example for discovery. I just didn't change that. I'll have to go back and change that. I got to go back and review this all this stuff that I put together. But I've got everything here in the court course that we're running. If you file this paper in the court, the judge has to respond to this and order them to give discovery. Everything, every shred of evidence they have, you have to have every single piece. And if when you go to trial and they bring up something that they hadn't given you, that in itself is a violation of the process. Okay, you got to have everything. So okay, you need to know what, and what you'll find, I'll bet you dollars to donuts, very, very little of that stuff is even certified, so it's probably not even good evidence. You know, and if you understand how evidence works and how something has to be certified, sworn to, and it's not, you can go through the whole process. This is out, that's out, that's out, that's out. You know, again, you get back to court process. People don't understand how this works. They need to understand these processes that goes through the court. And people get, convicted when there is no evidence really there, nothing that's sworn, nothing that's real. This happens all the time. Look what happened with this caller we had a little earlier here with the kid that was arrested, for breaking a phone, and then because he had some alcohol in him, but nobody saw him drive. It wasn't that they stopped him in a car or anything. I mean, the whole thing was a sham. Plus, it was a place, a town court, that's a Nisi Prius court, doesn't have the power to fine or incarcerate. There was no indictment. There was no trial. I mean, a lot of this is the same in all over the place, and people are going to jail all day long. You go down to the town court on whatever day they do their court hearings, Wednesdays or whatever it is, and you sit in there and listen in, and, you know, people are just being beat up all day long with no evidence, nothing.
Right.
And they don't understand what's going on, and they can't afford to get a lawyer, or they don't bring a lawyer in, or whatever the case may be. Not that the lawyer is going to necessarily help them anyway, because when they want to get you, they want to get you, and even your lawyer is going to play ball with them. And that they're going to serve, that lawyer is going to serve the good old boys club before it serves you, even though you're paying for that lawyer. People just don't understand this. Look at bar attorneys are a problem. They destroyed an entire justice system.
Yeah.
Entire justice system totally destroyed. It doesn't exist no more.
Yeah, and my idea, and this might be far fetched, but it just seems like, you know, I feel like at this point where we are as a country, there are a lot of people that are kind of still looking to the government to fix everything, right? And
right.
I think there's a lot of people like us that are saying, we the people, like, we have to take it back and we have to never lose it ever again. And we have to be diligent and on guard, and freedom is not free, and we have this new understanding, right?
What people need to understand, this is what you need to understand and everybody needs to understand. We don't have government by the majority. We have government by the majority that participates. You get 50 or so people in your county working together, you will take that county back because you will have more people than they got. Okay, they have committee men that work the political process. In my county, there's 249 positions and they're not even all filled. Okay, nevertheless, when a committee of safety meets the level, 100 people, maybe they have 100 people, you have 100 people, and they'll jump ship once they find out about committees of safety that it's real. They're going to jump ship and come over to that because you're empowered with much more powers. You can recall, you can walk papers, you can file papers on town board and remove them from office. You could do the same thing with school boards. People don't understand that, you know, and that's a big problem is our educational system with the kids and everything. They're being destroyed, totally destroyed. And but you can remove the education board. You can remove that board and get the proper education to the children in that particular school district. I'm gonna write a paper on how to do that, how to approach that process and to empower yourselves to go in there and take control of the school board and remove them because they're not doing it. But that's the school board. And this is true with every part of government. You could do the same thing with every part of government. You're going to remove them all.
Well, yes. And I think the thing that I'm learning or that I have at least seen, you know, we might be right morally and even just historically, but it just seems like whoever's got the enforceability wins. So
right. You've
even seen people arrested that are completely in the right at these meetings, you know, at the ones you're talking about with the school boards. And there
okay, on a local level, you can deal with that local level right now. Okay, when you get into the state level and the federal level, there's problems, major problems. But that's to a degree, because look at once you put them in a sling, you know, when you get in there and the judge and you put that judge on notice on certain things, you know, they don't want this on the record. And you start pursuing things, you start pushing forward for their bonds, and you pull their bond. Okay, that's just the beginning, and you remove them from the bench. All that can be done, okay? It's not that it's easy to be done, but there is a procedure, there's a process, and it can be done. There'll be a lot of resistance and so on. But, you know, when we get on the other side of things, because things are going to happen soon, when we get onto the other side and we win back the courts on the federal level, we take everything back at that point. Because once you get the federal level back and you get the power and the authority of the law being applied, justice courts, that goes right down. You could take any town. Well, first of all, town courts are irrelevant. You know, the Nisi Prius courts, you give them resist their jurisdiction and then you bring them into federal court for cause if it's necessary, but you can beat that jurisdiction. But once you get the federal courts that are operating properly and will protect the Constitution, the rights of the people, and acknowledge the Constitution, then you can push the same thing down into every state court. Now you can get things done. And so now is a time for learning, because that's going to happen. It's just a matter of time. As Trump said, you know, as a matter of fact, he just put something out, something about diamonds or something. A while back he said, and he said this a couple of times, you know, when someone comes in and they robbed a diamond store, and they get caught, they got to give the diamonds back, and that's in the process right now. You know, these people have been caught, and they got to give everything back. They're going to lose everything. But the thing is that now, as Trump said when he got elected the first time, you know, I was elected not to take power, but to give the power back to the people. Okay, that's what he said, and that's what he intends on doing. But the problem is the people don't know how to take that power. They don't know how to exercise that power. They don't have the knowledge of that power. They don't know anything about it. They don't know what to do. They think the only thing they could do is vote and maybe go on a jury call. I mean, no, that's not power. They totally control all that. We have to take the whole thing back. So people need to know how to have power and authority. But once you understand, when you create a committee of safety and you get educated, and remember, you know, many many hands make light work. So, you know, someone will get educated here and someone educated there, and coming together collectively, you have all the knowledge you need. And once you do that, you take your county back, town by town. And once you do that, then you also taken back those representatives that represent you, at Washington, D.C., senators should be back to the legislators. That the state should be putting the senators in. We have congressmen, but you start to, you know, taking control of your representatives on your state level and on your federal level, and you'll start to get some business done. And if other counties are doing the same thing, we're going to take this whole nation back. We'll take the state back and we'll take the nation back. But we have to get the committees of safety going. We have 3,134 counties, so we need at least, you know, we need about 3,000 counties to do the whole thing. But even if we get two-thirds or maybe 50%, 60% of the counties, that's powerful. And once you have success and people in another place, in another county sees that, they're going to want to do the same thing. So we have to get all the patriots really organized to do these things, to get the committees of safety going. That's power. And to get educated. You know, your heritage, you know, is in the law. Okay, that's your heritage. What is your inheritance? Your inheritance is liberty. Okay, right. But if you don't understand the law, you really don't understand liberty. Number one, you don't understand how to empower yourself. You don't know how to resist these people and battle with them. You have to know the law, and we're not talking civil law. That's boring and just nonsense. No, we're talking natural law, which is exciting. It's written in man's heart. That's what God says. Right. So, you know. Common law is really common sense. That's what that is. And we've lost our common sense. People are even confused with common sense. They have to grab the common sense back.
Yeah. And I want to run something past you and see if you let me know if you think this is kind of a crazy idea, because the more research that I've done, because my initial idea was to go to the federal court, but I heard Trump speaking, and actually I heard another podcast that was saying the Ninth Circuit is so corrupt that 80-some percent, I don't know if it was 82 or 85 percent, a lot, of constitutional cases that go to the Supreme Court get overturned. So, like I said, they're all in on it. And
yeah,
I'm just wondering.
Yeah, it's bad. It's bad.
Yeah, and so I'm just wondering with my case, they've been very hesitant to hear any of the Title 18's conspiracy against rights or even the civil cases. And I've got everything. So literally, and what's fortunate about my argument is when they arrested me, they threw me in jail for a week. And if you look at the Juris Book of Prudence in Book 16, it says, if the Constitution prescribes one law and the local statute another law, it is the duty of the courts to rule in the favor of the constitutional rights of the defendant. And so they knew. They knew because the 911 call, which they withheld from my preliminary hearing, and they kept it from me for many, many months. I just hounded them for it and finally got it. And the girl says right on there that she's wanting to kill me. She's telling dispatch this. Right on the transcript, the dispatch is going, apparently I've got the victim, but all she's saying is she wants to kill the R1, which is me. And so I get my phone back. She had stolen my phone. I call the police. I'm like, get over here. Get over here. Like, there's guns involved. You know, they're like, have you shot it? I was like, no, but I will if I need to protect myself. She's yelling the whole time about how she's going to, like, take me out. And, again, I don't even know who this person is. She showed up at my mailbox in my house. But my point is that, you know, I feel like the only thing I can think of in my case is to ask the Supreme Court to hear it, because I don't know how.
Well, look, you have to understand how the process works. I mean, you can't just go to a federal court. A federal court doesn't hear cases per se, not cases on the state level. They have to. That's why it's called, you move to federal court for cause. So there has to be a constitutional violation, a violation of one of your unalienable rights. And once you have that, that's the only thing they can hear. Okay. For instance,
right. And this was my right to life, right?
Huh?
Wasn't it my right to life? My Fifth Amendment right to life was violated.
Right to life? Well.
Yeah,
again, you have to get your due process in your state court, and if you're not getting due process there, that's where you can move, you know, for denial of due process. There, you can move it to the court. Let's say there was criminal charges taken against you in a town court. You know, that's a good court to make the point on. The town court is an E.C. Prius court. So you go in there and you challenge a jurisdiction. You tell the judge, hey, you guys don't have the personam jurisdiction. So there's nothing you could do. You need to have this case thrown out. I'm denying you jurisdiction. And when the judge refuses the denial of jurisdiction, okay, but I'll tell you, the papers that I wrote on this is pretty powerful, and most judges are going to really be concerned to deny you from that point. But in any event, let's say they deny you. So they deny it and say, no, you're coming to court. We're going to – well, then you move the court. You move it to federal court for cause. Now, when you go into federal court for cause, and remember, these guys are not very smart. The lawyers that will go up there, they're going to try to argue the case and say, hey, this guy's a criminal. He did this, that, and the other thing. Hey, that's totally irrelevant. We're not talking about that. We're only here for one purpose. The federal court can only hear the violation of an unalienable right, you know, a right of due process in this case, and that they don't have the jurisdiction. That's the only issue the federal court can hear. Okay, so you could move that court to have that a mandamus sent down with a command to cease and desist, and that's it. It's over. At the same time, you can get restitution. Again, I always look for $1,000 face value of Morgan silver dollars. That's what I want. And for every violation, it would be $1,000 face value silver coins, Morgan silver coins particularly. Last I looked, they were like $26 a piece. So that's $26,000 for each violation. Okay, so you could get the violation, you can get restitution in a federal court for denial of due process and any other denial of your rights, and a cease and desist order, and that's it. It's over with. And if you put it, if you couch it right and you take him to federal court, you can probably win. I don't think, as long as everything's in good shape and the judge sees that you know what you're doing and could be concerned, depending on how you handle the case, maybe you've set up a quo warranto, because I'd do a quo warranto at the same time, then that federal judge would know, hey, a quo warranto may be coming his way too if he doesn't do the right thing. Because you got to put a little fear into the heart or the mind of these judges, that you know they're going to be held accountable somehow. And if they see that you know how to do it, they don't want that aggravation. Even though they're going to try to maintain status quo, on a case of that type, they may say, "Well, it's just not worth it," you know, and they'll run with the justice part at that point in time. But again, everything's an uphill battle at this point. Now is a time for educating. You need to get educated now, because when the time comes, you're going to execute that, exercise that education, and we're going to take things back.
Okay.
So with that, I got to move to the next caller because it's getting late, and we got four more people in the queue here. Okay.
Well, the last thing I just want to address, if it's okay, I just want to ask. So, what disturbs me is that I've uncovered their ability to obstruct justice every step of the way, and then if they get caught, kind of like what you're talking about, or if you press them, then they just drop the charges, almost like no harm, no foul. And even if you can get restitution, I still want my trial. I want the people to understand how important our Second Amendment rights are. So I'm just curious where that
Well, there's other ways. Look at there. Even if that case doesn't go that direction, you can create another case. But you have, again, it gets back to the knowledge, how the system works, how the process works, how the paperwork works. And it is quite simple, really, because it is all common sense. You just have to learn procedure. That's all. So if you're interested, take the course, because, you know, you'll need that course in order to, pursue what you're looking to pursue. Because right now, you don't know enough to get anywhere. They'll walk all over you, and you'll wonder, you know, how you got thrown out of the court and how things didn't go your way, or whatever the case may be, or, you know, whatever, however that case is going, you know?
Well, and the last thing I just want to leave you with, and I know you need to get to the next call, so I'll make it brief, but the other thing that's really disturbing to me, I'm disabled, so I'm supposed to have representation. And so that's partly why I want this case to go before the Supreme Court, is if people don't see that these judges and all these people...
If this is a Second Amendment issue, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, there are lots of cases on this level, and a lot of them are not going anywhere because, again, people don't know how to couch the case, but we're also dealing with corrupt judges and judges that are maintaining the status quo for numerous reasons. I mean, we can only guess on what they are.
Well, and here's the thing, and this goes back to what you were saying earlier, which I thought was really interesting about who has authority, like, over the jury. And, you know, right now it's people that shouldn't, you know, and they never should have had it, and they took it.
Well, we're going to teach a strategy on how to take control of a jury. You know, that's one of the things we're going to be talking in the course.
But I think that this is at the root and the core of my case, is that there was the case itself, just did I have the right to defend myself, and of course the Bruin case, you know, ruled in my favor, and of course they still didn't drop the charges. But this is Hawaii. But my point is that once you see all the fraud that has gone on for over 700, I think it's been 30 days now, you actually now have the question of, can the government, who is the entity, the entire reason why the Second Amendment was written was for us to be able to protect ourselves against tyranny by the government.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is what they did to me. So that's what I'm saying. It's a little different than Bruin. It kind of goes back to now, do they even have the authority to say, you need to get a permit from me? You're the one I'm supposed to be protecting myself against. Right?
Again, you're not going to get anywhere if you don't know how the system works. I'm telling you, they'll walk all over you, and you'll wonder what happened and where things went. I mean, and again, you got to learn the process. That's all I can tell you.
Yeah, I agree with you.
There are a lot of people pursuing the gun issue from every state, probably. I mean, especially here in New York, and maybe there in Hawaii, too. I got to get moving on the next caller because I don't have much time, and we do have people in the queue here. So,
yeah,
okay.
Thank you so much.
Okay. All right. Thank you. All right, next question. Jim from PA. How you doing, Jim?
Jim in Pennsylvania. John, I'm in the process of appealing my court county hearing to state court, and they what was my I lost my train of thought, John.
You're in a county court and you want to move it to state court? Did you say that?
Yeah. And oh yeah, okay. Here's something. It's so typical, I think, of the court system today. Okay, I'm gonna. I already was ruled by the county court that I had. It's a criminal case that I had pallets on my in my yard,
mm-hmm.
and that's a criminal case. They say.
Yeah.
So I appealed it, but I have a friend, the county judge, common pleas court judge, ruled against me, saying, yeah, they look ugly, and they agreed with the local magistrate or local solicitor that they look bad, these pallets. So here's the
problem. They don't have jurisdiction, okay? They don't have jurisdiction over the people. That's the key. They don't have personam jurisdiction. Any town court does not have personam jurisdiction. People... Look, this is the problem that people have. They're so ignorant, they don't know that. If people got up into the court one after another and say, I deny your jurisdiction, you don't have it. If they got the knowledge to do that, they'd be shutting those town courts down, and they need to be shut down.
And I understand that. And I understand what you're saying, John, but let me just – this is what I wanted to let you know. So anyways, I told my friend this, who has a friend, that the judge owes favors to. So he said if I talked to his friend, he could talk to the judge to change his opinion on my case. That's how bad the system is. I mean, it's...
Yeah. Well, look, I would file a paper challenging jurisdiction, and then you look at... I don't want to look at it this way, but, you know, you're getting injured, so you get restitution. You're going to get money out of this thing by moving it to federal court for cause and have a cease and desist order sent down. I mean, but again, how do you do that? You got to learn how to do it. You have to learn how the process works and the procedures and how motions work. You got to learn all of those things. And without knowledge of those things, you're gonna. It's like playing chess. They make a move, and you're not gonna know what the next move is. Maybe you'll know that move, but you won't know the next move. You know, because you don't have enough knowledge of how the game is played. And let me tell you, these lawyers are lazy. And they're morons. They have no respect for their own paperwork. They're really sloppy. They're not educated well. They're taught what to think, not how to think. So there's very few good lawyers out there that really can put up a good battle. Most of them are pushovers. If you understand the system and how it works, you can push them right over and win a case, you know. But again... You know, you have to learn how things work. That's the key. You're signed up for the course, I think, aren't you?
I have not. But, John, the reason I brought this up is I just wanted to use an illustration how de facto the court system is. By having one person contact the judge that the judge owes a favor to can change the opinion.
Yeah, but you're not going to get anyone to listen to you on that. It's corruption from the lowest level to the highest level. It's corruption. I will tell you, even the United States Supreme Court justices are corrupt.
Okay, but I just wanted to give an example tonight for some reason. But, you know, because I'm experienced it myself, and that's why. But listen, my other question is, what is certified evidence? You had mentioned certified
everything. Yeah, it has to be bona fide. It has to be sworn to. For instance, let's take the situation. Let's say you have 10 pictures of something that you want to use as evidence. Okay. Well, you have to have those pictures certified. The person who took those pictures, for instance, has to do a sworn affidavit, adhering, you know, to the fact, certifying the fact and swearing to the fact that they took these pictures, and this is what took place at this time, at this day, so on and so forth. It's certifying something. If you're going to use something, evidence out of a You know, for instance, a paper from the county, for instance, you know, you can go into the county and you can look different things up and you can get some evidence. Well, you have to have that certified. So you have to take it over to the clerk and they have to certify it and they put their stamp and their seal on it. Unfortunately, they charge you a few bucks for that. But nevertheless, you get it certified. Now it's bona fide evidence. Any evidence you have. Matter of fact, we have a lot of information on evidence that we're going to discuss in our course. Every piece of evidence has to be certified. Nothing can be hearsay. Hearsay evidence or hearsay evidence per se as far as someone making a statement. You want to make a statement, that's fine, but it's got to be sworn to. You want to have an affidavit in place. And once that's sworn to, now when the trial starts, you know, you have all that information, you already know what the evidence is and what the statements were and what the evidence on the other side was and what the statements was and what's certified and what's not certified. A lot of lawyers will come into court without papers that aren't, things that aren't certified. And you'll lose a case on a case that you can win because nothing was certified. You know, first of all, you can't even have a case without a sworn affidavit that begins with. A lot of IRS cases, there's no ever sworn affidavit on their side to open a case. It doesn't exist. And that goes in town courts a lot of places. There's no evidence. Police report is not a sworn affidavit. Okay, even though it says here's the police report, here's what happened, and it says I swear this, and the police officer signs it, and that's it. Well, that's not a sworn affidavit. It has to be notarized. They don't like to get it notarized because now their feet is held to the fire. You know, especially federal agents. You know, everything has to be certified.
Okay, very good. Last point. Has the Nisi Prius legal actions been abolished?
I don't understand how you're framing the question. Nisi Prius is a court, which means unless first, which means you've agreed to something prior in order to come into that court. I'll give you an example. If you work for the government and they're holding and you go into a court that's executing, look, at town courts do have certain authorities to be able to deal with certain issues like commercial activities, okay? Traffic tickets are commercial, okay? All traffic tickets are commercial. So they have the authority to hear that, but they don't have the personam jurisdiction over an individual that is not working for a government or working in a commercial activity when they were driving, okay? So they don't have personam jurisdiction. Any code violation, okay, that's written can't be written against a person. It can only be written against a violation, a person who is operating something commercially or they're working for a government agency. Only those people can be applied equity. That's called equity law. So only that can be applied to them, but they can't apply it to the people. People don't know that, so therefore they're like sheep for the slaughter. They go up before the judge, give me a $200 fine and this or that, or send you to jail for 30 days, and they just go away and they accept it, okay? No, challenge it, sue them, and get restitution for the destruction, for incarcerating you, for you know, for taking your money, whatever, denying you due process. All this has a value because it's an injury. For every injury in common law, for every injury, there must be a remedy. It's not like it'd be nice to be a remedy. No, there must be a remedy. That's a common law a maxim. If you've been injured, you must be restored. That's the law. Anyway, with that, I got to move to the next caller because I got to leave. Yeah.
Could the Bar Association have abolished this Nisi Prius?
The Bar Association is the problem that created it.
Okay, but I'm saying, could they have abolished it so that we can't use it now?
No, only the people can get rid of this.
Okay.
The only way we're going to get rid of this is for the people, enough people to get educated. And again, we don't need everyone to get educated. We don't have government by the majority. We have government by the majority that participates. It's a handful of people in every county that run everything, okay, and the whole process. The people, if you get a good handful of people in the county, they could take everything back. But again, you know, the people have to take back. We're talking about government by consent, ultimately.
The explanation for the 1925B statement that I needed, the problem was I can't find an example of a 1925B statement. and I'll yield.
Yeah, well, you, is this in a town court?
Yeah, they want me to forward it to...
Well, you have to go to the town and ask them what that is and where it is. It's probably some kind of a, you know, a town ordinance or something. Because you said it's up with pallets, so it's a town ordinance. That's what you want to do. Go get that, and you'll probably find it. Look, I took, you know, if you take your traffic ticket, there's a number up there, and if you look the number up, it's commercial law to begin with. It's traffic law. And if you look it up, you can find it online, the list of it in your state, and you look up the number, you'll find it has nothing to do with you, okay? You know, the last ticket I had that I won was, I think it was operating a commercial vehicle. I wasn't operating a commercial vehicle. But you see, they can't get me for, there's nothing in there that applies to me. So if you go look at the law, you might find that it doesn't even apply to you. And you can bring that in. But they don't have jurisdiction. Challenge jurisdiction, and that's it. You're out of there. But again, it's an uphill battle.
Their body, that I'm trying to say, is the BACA process. That's their body. It's who you know. It's not what you know, it's who you know.
That's the corruption that they're running under.
Exactly. Okay.
You want courts of justice. Look, they could be as corrupt as they want. We want to apply justice.
Okay.
Brent says this all the time. The remedy for lawlessness is the law.
Okay. Very good. I yield, John. Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right. With that, I got to go. I have to leave now, so... we have a few people in the queue, but we'll have to get you next week. Try to get in early, and we'll get you. And Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday. And, of course, we'll be this Saturday. We're going to start the first lesson this Saturday, 12 noon, right here in this room. Everybody that signed up, we'll get in the email. We're going to test your email, so you need to respond so we know that everybody's getting an email. And then we'll be sending out a code to get into this room on a Saturday for the course. All right. Good night, everybody. Thanks for coming. Goodbye.